I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour of the program, we're going to talk about voting. This figure always astounds me. Only about half of the people who could vote in the 2012 U.S. presidential election actually did so. Only 53.6% of the voting age population. What could we do to make that a much higher percentage? We'll have some very interesting thoughts on that coming up. But this is a very busy hour. We also have our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive going on. I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson, who's joining me in our Milwaukee studios. You rely, I know, on WPR for informative and in-depth discussions, and we rely on you to keep programs like this one on the air. Your gift right now of any amount makes a difference. Believe you me, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello, John.
Well, hello, Kathleen. And, of course, it's my privilege to announce this hour's goal.
What is it?
It's 30 pledges.
Ooh, okay.
30 pledges by 2 o'clock. That's our goal this hour. And we have these goals set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs you rely on, programs like the Kathleen Dunn Show. You can help out with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're thinking that your tax dollars, your federal and state tax dollars, already support WPR, you're right, they do, and we thank you for that.
But listener support is actually the single largest piece of our operating budget. You make the difference. You make the quality and variety of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the programs you listen to. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
It's possible to make your pledge even easier when you become a sustainer. You can choose a monthly amount that's right for you, maybe $10, $15 a month, and then you have it charged from your bank account or your credit card.
Oh, this sustainer program has been just awesomely successful for Wisconsin Public Radio, Kathleen. You know, for sustainers, your monthly gift continues year after year, so your support is always current. You don't even have to think about it anymore. Become a sustainer now, WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552. It's the most efficient and powerful way you can give.
Here at WPR, a lot of thought goes into what we select as thank you gifts during our membership drives. We ask people for their ideas, we check out what other public radio stations are offering, and do lots of internet research. And it's all worth it because we're introducing the WPR Logo Day Pack.
It's a fabric bag, reusable, good for the environment, and it has a Wisconsin Public Radio logo on it.
It's perfect for all of your daily adventures. So ask for the WPR Day Pack when you donate $15 a month or more. Support your source by giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. John Munson is with me in our studios, and we are here to raise the money that keeps the station and this program on the air. We've already had one pledge, so we're off
Yay.
To a start. Yeah. Whether your pledge is, I don't know what you can give. $5 a month, maybe $100 a month. We do appreciate it, and we really need your gift.
Well, and you know, the cool thing is that it doesn't really matter because it's all up to you.
Exactly.
I mean, it matters that you make a pledge, but whether it's $5 a month or $100 a month, that's entirely your choice. It's true, I think, that we live in a generous society, news reports to the contrary. We're quick to help a neighbor in need, and we chip in for good causes.
And you can continue the tradition of generosity when you support WPR right now. If you have never given to WPR before, you can become our next new member at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Many new members give $5 or $10 a month. The amount, as John was saying, it's totally up to you.
Well, and if you're a regular Kathleen Dunn Show listener, you've been following every step of this year's election. Maybe you're not as big a news junkie as some people. Maybe you're just an interested bystander. Well, either way, this has certainly been an eventful political season. Issues, candidates, the economy, the latest accusations and missteps, it's all nonstop from here to the election and beyond.
And you'll hear about it. We do great coverage right here on Wisconsin Public Radio every single day. WPR depends on your support, so make your gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Help pay for the programs you depend on. We need 29 more of you to make that decision in before 2 o'clock this afternoon. You can make your donation now. Support the programs you enjoy at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And your pledge right now says this: I value this program. I want more of it. It makes me think. Sometimes we even laugh. You fill in the blank with how you feel when you hear this show. Those are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. Join, renew, or make an extra gift. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
29 pledges to go before 2 o'clock this afternoon. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really does help.
And this pledge drive, you can ask for that WPR Day Pack. It's a very neat, handy bag. It has both the WPR and NPR logos, and it's yours for a pledge of $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, John. Okay, we're going to be talking about voting this hour, an appropriate topic as we're about a month away from an election. Only, as I said at the top of the hour, about half of the people, this astounds me, who could vote in the 2012 U.S. presidential election actually did so. And that's only 53.6% of the voting age population. It puts turnout in the U.S. among the worst in developed countries. Our guest has written an interesting piece in Scientific American and says, by way of contrast, 87.2% of Belgians, 80.5% of Australians, and 73.1% of Finns voted in their last election. In a nation quick to defend democracy both within its borders and beyond, she writes, why aren't more Americans exercising what is arguably their biggest democratic right? And what would we have to do to make more people vote? We entertain that question this hour of the program, and we'll welcome your phone calls. Our guest is Supriya Sial. She's a behavioral scientist in Toronto, Canada, and she uses evidence-based methods from psychology and neuroscience to help solve challenges in business, public, and policy sectors. Her PhD is in psychology from Cornell University. Her piece is How Science Can Help Get the Vote Out. It's in the September-October issue of Scientific American Mind. And Supriya, thank you very much for being with us for this timely analysis. Hi.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. I read those statistics and they are just dramatic when you look at where we compare with Belgians and Australians and Finns. So many more people vote in those countries. It's quite astounding.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, as I was saying in the article, it puts turnout in the U.S. as 31 among the 34 most developed countries in the world. And it really begs the question of what is it that we're not doing effectively in terms of mobilizing the electorate? And certainly you would think that there are structural barriers or obstacles that are preventing people from casting their ballot or even getting to the polls in some instances. But what we're trying to outline in this article are alternative but evidence-based, you know, scientific approaches to increasing turnout.
Mm-hmm. And some of these are very interesting. Instead of simply telling Americans to vote, the scientific evidence suggests that we need to think about the context in which citizens decide to cast their ballots. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so, you know, traditionally, voter mobilization strategies have been based on information. We're trying to tell people that it's their duty to vote as civic-minded citizens. But the truth is, we all live busy, chaotic lives where, despite our best intentions, a number of things that we want to do simply fall by the wayside. And so what behavioral science has been able to understand and apply is that people don't make decisions, any decisions, including the voting decision, in a vacuum. And the context in which we make decisions can not only affect the outcome, but it can impact, fundamentally alter it. So what the research and the article is arguing is that voting is like many other human behaviors. And in deciding to vote, just as in the case of so many other things we do in life, you know, we care about not just whether or not we're voting, but we care about what other people are doing. We care about who is watching. We care about who we want other people to believe we are. We ourselves want to believe we are a certain type of person. And all of these can have a significant impact on whether or not we ourselves decide to cast a ballot.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was interesting, and I know that it's been used in Wisconsin before because I got one of those pieces of mail. It was so different that it caught my attention. Direct mailing. Tell me where this has been done before, but if you are given this sheet that lets you know that your neighbors will be informed as to who had voted after the election. I've already received one of those after the election. It shows your neighbor and it has the name of the neighbor voted and the person on the other side of your house voted as well. You cite this primary election in California in 2006 in which the number of people voting went way up if they had received a notice like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was a really interesting study, and what it's sort of using this idea that the people, you know, want others to believe that they're a certain type of individual. We want to think that we are a upstanding citizen who's going to show up when it matters. So what they did in this study was that they basically used this effect of public scrutiny and accountability on turnout. So they told people that they were being watched, but they varied how public the scrutiny would be. So either only third-party researchers would know if they had voted, or their own household would know if they had voted, or both their household and their neighbors would know if they voted. So these are three different groups of voters. And what they found was that, you know, sure enough, keeping up with the Joneses is really motivating.
Hmm.
So this condition that included maximum social accountability, which is when the neighbors would know, resulted in a 6.3 percentage point increase, which is very, very significant for mailings relative to a letter that was, you know, just encouraging people to vote. So to put that into context, general get-out-the-vote mailings lead to between a 0 to 2 percentage point increase. So this was a vastly higher turnout as a result of this intervention.
Mm-hmm. And Supriya, what are your personal feelings about that? Does it seem to you're in my face, you're in my business, too intimidating and an invasion of personal privacy to publish something like that?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I think it sort of is also linked to this other intervention that I talked about in this paper, which is the sort of self-identity research where, you know, we want to believe that we are a certain kind of person. And so I think the reason that putting out this kind of information works is that it plays on our desire to be a certain kind of person. Principally, we're not actually changing the decision that you're making. We're just changing the information that we're supplying in letting people letting people decide what it is that they want to do, you know. And in many ways, this is not different from a number of other behaviors that we want to encourage in society. For instance, we know that people are less likely to litter if other people are watching. So we can create scenarios where they believe, you know, that they're being watched in that way. Or we're more likely to give to charity if we believe that other people are watching. So knowing that others know that we did our part in upholding the social contract of voting allows us to maintain our self-identity as contributing members of society. And I think whatever we can do to encourage people or get them out of the ballot is ultimately better for a more representative democracy.
Mm-hmm. I love, and I don't know who thought of this idea and if it's done all over the country, but it is an expression of self-identity when you're given that little sticker after you vote that says, I voted, and I know I love to wear that all day long. I feel so proud in a way. I've always felt that way. I voted.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Facebook, as other sort of emerging social networking technologies are also using this idea and to great effect. So in fact, in the 2010 congressional election, you know, Facebook did this little intervention where they had people could post on their status saying, I voted. And that led to a pretty significant increase. It's estimated that about 340,000 extra people voted as a function of one of the messages that they used. And so it really comes back to this idea of voting as a very social activity. I mean, it's not, you know, we of course do it in private and we contemplate the decision of who to vote for either with close others or in private. But the act of it, the act of contributing to society or upholding your part of a social bargain in that way is a very inherently social act. So all of these other measures, these other things that impact social behavior also in turn impact voting. In fact, there's a paper that just came out and it's really interesting. What they did there was they basically, it was again a get out the vote mailing. But what it suggested that there was some potential follow-up. So basically, the letter noted that participants may be contacted to discuss their experience at the polls. And it wasn't even that you will be contacted. It was merely the suggestion that you might be contacted. And that as well led to a significant increase in the number of people who turned out to vote. Mm. All of this is measured by actual turnout.
I know you've written about how when people make calls, are you planning on voting? We all get calls like that it makes sense to have a plan that you talk not only about are you going to vote, but let's talk about the plan for voting, and we'll talk about that as we continue. Let's take one phone call. We'll take many during the hour, but let's go to Annette in Green Bay. Hi, Annette.
Hi. I think that comparison is a little unfair to these European and other Western countries because they have a parliamentary government, and so some of the smaller groups are represented. But here, the Democrats, Republicans have pretty much squashed everybody else, and there's hardly a chance that we'd ever have any good balance or. You know, a democracy that's made up of a number of parties. So if we had more choice here, if we had a parliamentary system of government, I think a lot more people would vote.
Supriya, what do you think?
I think that's a fair point. I mean, there's certainly, you know, the way government is structured will definitely impact how people feel about the political climate that they live in. Nonetheless, I do think that it holds true that, you know, boosting turnout does ultimately create a more representative democracy, and there's lots of evidence to suggest that the views of voters play a hugely significant role in changing policy. There's data to show that increasing turnout is associated with increased, you know, redistribution of wealth and so on and so forth. I do hear and take the point that the way government is structured might decrease the number of choices people have, but I think it still bears to reason that voting and increasing turnout, given the system that we have, would ultimately lead to better outcomes for a larger number of citizens in the U.S.
Our topic this hour is why aren't more Americans voting? And our guest is Supriya Sial. She's a behavioral scientist, and she has a Ph.D. in psychology. We are referencing a piece that she wrote in Scientific American, How Science Can Help Get Out the Vote. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we're also in our fall membership drive, and your support is the foundation of our budget. It's what makes WPR your place for great programs. We'll get back to voting in just one moment. First, John Munson is with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 at this very moment to make your gift in support of the programs that you count on.
And we're within 25 pledges of our goal for this hour. We need 25 pledges before 2 o'clock to stay on track. Your gift is very important, and it helps to support the programs like the Kathleen Dunn Show that you rely on every day.
We thank you if you've already given. If you have not, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The word passionate, I think, is very apt in describing how we feel about bringing you these 2 hours of radio from 1 to 3 o'clock, Monday through Thursday. Books, history, sports, politics, social issues, education, it's all here. We're here for you with important and fun topics, too.
And we can't do it without your support. Listener contributions make up about 40% of our budget, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's why we're asking for your gift right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Here's something else to think about. Why not consider sharing your appreciation of the lifelong learning you get from WPR with others? Make a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. And provide an important piece of funding for the programs we all rely on.
Make that leadership gift right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
One of the reasons that Wisconsin Public Radio has been around for as long as it has, very nearly 100 years, is because we're committed to quality. That quality is possible because of you, so thank you for that. Listener donations, single largest piece of our budget.
It's your contribution that makes this program possible and so many others as well. You're part of the quality that you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Lance from Madison.
And I'm Cheryl.
When did we become sustaining members? Cheryl, I'm trying to remember. It's been quite a while. You do the
finances.
I think
maybe it was about the same time that I moved here. So we've probably been sustaining members of WPR for about 10 years. We had each supported public radio in our respective states. And when I was an Iowa resident, I supported Iowa Public Radio and Lance supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And so I think when I moved here to Wisconsin, to Madison, we just pooled our efforts and decided to become sustaining members because we realized what a big part of our everyday life WPR had become and felt morally obligated to help support the programming.
Feel good and make a difference right now at WPR.org.
It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson asking for your support of WPR. It's our fall membership drive. And if you're thinking about how much, well, $10, $20 a month, whatever amount you choose.
It's the right amount, whatever amount that is. When we were talking about quality just a moment ago, one of the things that occurs to me is that when you make a contribution to your radio station, to Wisconsin Public Radio, then when you listen and you hear all of that quality that we're putting out here every day of the week, 24 hours a day, every day of the year, then you can feel like, okay, that's mine. I helped pay for that quality. So you kind of own that in a way. You come to Wisconsin Public Radio for discussions about ideas, whether it's an interesting little nugget or something big that could change history.
And I love doing history shows because then you're informed about the present. Your whole day can be changed by something you hear. And sometimes this happens frequently. You'll hear something on the show and then all of a sudden there is that idea again 2 days ago and you never heard of the idea before and all of a sudden it's everywhere. Don't you love that?
Oh,
I love that.
That's
living.
Absolutely. Well, and here's your chance to support that. This fall membership drive is your opportunity to be part of the radio service that you and thousands of other people rely on. Make your difference by giving now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step. Now, take the next step and become a financial supporter.
And you know what? It's surprisingly easy to go from listener to supporter. Just decide how much you'd like to give. $5, $10 a month is a great starting point. And then make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be wondering, how much should I give? Well, it's up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs. We guarantee that. That's our part of the deal. Programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long.
So make your pledge in any amount right now, WPR.org, or by calling 888-202-2552. And when you do, you'll be playing an essential part in funding the programs you count on every day.
We have 24 more pledges, John, to go until 2 o'clock this afternoon. So help out now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, show your support for WPR in a very symbolic way by asking for the WPR Day Pack. You can put WPR on your back and carry us with you wherever you go, just like your contributions carry these programs. It's gray and black with the WPR and NPR logos. It's lightweight. It's perfect for everyday use. Show your pride for the radio station you love when you make a $15 a month contribution or a one-time gift of $180 at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
If you're a sustaining member, we thank you. Make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Well, here's a comment I've really been waiting to read. We have a listener in De Pere who says, I grew up listening to WPR on the radio since my mom was always a big fan. As a kid, I never understood why she liked it. Boring, droning voices about topics I didn't understand. I am happy to say that now I do understand, and my radio never leaves WPR. Thank you for providing and promoting well-informed news and current events topics. Well, thank you so much. You could be the next person to make that pledge and help us keep this radio station going. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. We're talking about voting this hour and trying to figure out why it is that only about half of the people who could vote in our U.S. presidential election actually did so. Maybe we'll be surprised, although there are concerns that our turnout because of the unfavorability factor in this particular presidential election could keep people from the polls. But what is it about it? This isn't just this election. Our guest says that turnout has consistently hovered around 50% for the past 9 U.S. presidential elections, the highest turnout being 56.9% in 2008. When you look at other countries, the figure is quite different. Why? And we're asking for your thoughts about this as well. Our guest this hour is Supriya Sial, and she is a behavioral scientist. Her piece is How Science Can Help Get Out the Vote. It's in the September-October issue of Scientific American Mind. So let's go back to phone calls. Diane in Woodbury, Minnesota. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
First, thank you for taking my call, and I need to let you know how much I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Couple of points I wanted to make. First one is that I heard this saying, it might not be that unknown, but it is that we get the government we deserve as a population. And the second point I want to make is that we don't vote in large numbers, not even for governors, states,
right,
representatives, whatever. And it is those really impact our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so enormously important, and Minnesota is considered a high voter turnout when we get 60% out. So, you know, there's still 40% that need to get to the polls.
Right. Yeah, and she does remind us, we were talking about presidential elections. When you go to midterm elections, Supriya, the numbers are dismal.
Yeah, and there, you know, there definitely is a disjunct there. I mean, it is generally the case that high salience elections, such as presidential elections, draw a larger number of the populace to come out. Nevertheless, there's definitely measures that can be, you know, none of the strategies outlined here need to be limited to a presidential election, although some are differentially more effective in a high salience or more visible election, if you will. But also to Diane's point about the lack of involvement in general. I mean, I think behavioral science. There's another point that is, I think, pertinent here, which is about why voting is actually important for individuals. So the research indicates that not only is voting important in terms of, electing a given individual, but our own actions can shape our preferences and beliefs. So in addition to signaling who we are to others, our actions also tell us something about who we are. So I did that, therefore I must be that kind of person. Or I did that, and therefore I must believe in it. And so from this perspective, a person who does not vote is not only not taking part in the democratic process in that particular instance, but he or she is also creating a self-signal of the form, I don't care about politics. And moving forward, that person might become less interested in civic rights or local governance or other elections. On the other hand, while casting one vote is no doubt an expression of interest in politics, it can also be a seed of interest in our political lives. So contemplated this way, getting out the vote for any given election is not important. It's not only important because it might change who gets elected, but it's also important because it will guide how involved we are in the country that elected head will lead or the state that elected head will govern.
Ken on Facebook says this, count me among those who favor a national holiday for fall elections. Rescind Columbus Day and transfer that holiday status to a national election day.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no denying that there are, there are structural changes that we could make that would increase the likelihood of people coming out to vote. So things like national holidays or automatic voter registration. So registration, there's many barriers to registration. It's a very cumbersome, arduous process in the U.S., paper-based. You got to do it every time you move. Same-day registration is limited. Early voting or in absentia voting is difficult to do. And of course, the holiday is very pertinent because there's been many, you could certainly make the case that marginalizes a given segment of the voter population because there are people who can take that time off from work and then there are people who simply cannot afford to do that. So there's no doubt that there are these structural hurdles to voting that we could address and that would lead to a significant increase in turnout. But I think the great power of these behavioral science interventions lies in their ability to catalyze citizen action despite these structural hurdles that exist in the path of the valiant voters, if you will. Now, and in a way, it highlights that at least some of the low turnout is not because of structural hurdles, but because of apathy, simply because we're able to actually move the dial without addressing the structural barriers. At the same time, the fact that we're able to move the needle and we barely scratched the surface of, behavioral science is a very hope-giving and happy thought.
We're asking the question this hour, why only about half of the people who could vote in the 2012 presidential election actually voted, and it's not a pattern that was an aberration. It's been true of about the past 9 presidential elections. What's going on in America? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and Alan from Baraboo is our next caller. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Say, I wish you guys could come over to my house so we could talk about this really for a long time. I know I only have just a tiny little slot, so I'll try to keep it a little bit more concise than that. First of all, I love this show, so thank you for having it.
Thank you.
My one thing I would point out, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, here's your democracy if you can keep it. And I do think it is important that we remember that this is, civilizations rise and fall, and governments, and different systems of government don't necessarily go on forever. And so I think it is important that we take it seriously. One of the things I'm wondering about is the Electoral College and its impact on our behavior. If I live in a red state and I'm a Democrat, why do I even bother and go and vote? I realize that that shouldn't matter when it comes to, like, mayoral and other kinds of elections. But still, I wonder about that. I just saw the film Electoral Dysfunction, and a lot of these things that you're talking about, like same-day registration and the different things that we could use to get more people out, are great, but the Electoral College still remains a place that seems kind of antiquated. I wonder if your guest looked at that as an impact on behavior.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, Alan. You know, the particular research that I was referring to in this piece didn't per se address any of that, so I can offer you my personal opinion, but it's not addressed in these interventions per se. So my thought is that, you know, when we take measures to increase voter turnout, we increase the breadth of interests that are represented in our democracy. So you're very right in bringing up the point that, you know, if you live in a state where it's highly unlikely that your representative will get elected, why bother? At the same time, I think it's despite the idea that, you know, parliamentarians or politicians are catering to or pandering to specific agendas, there is data to indicate that they are significantly affected by the views of the vast majority of the people that they are governing. And there's historical data to indicate that as well. So even if what we are able to do, even if all we are able to do is decrease the margin by which a given political entity was able to win an election, we can hope that that will, in the long term, impact their policies and their views and what kind of governance and representation strategies they are bringing to the place that they are elected in.
So Priya, let's go back to another thing you wrote about in Scientific American. We all get these calls a little bit closer to the actual election day. Are you planning to vote? Usually it's a candidate call saying, are you voting for so-and-so? And we urge you to vote for so-and-so. You have found some evidence that if you ask people beyond that, what are your plans for voting, that if you're very specific about how are you going to get there, where you're going to be voting, all of that may be more beneficial to boosting the numbers of people who vote?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this idea is based in the thought that, you know, we all have good intentions. So we're all going to go on that run. We're all going to not drink that extra glass of wine. We're all going to be superlatively productive. And then life gets in the way. But the finding in behavioral science is that if we make a concrete plan of how we're going to achieve that goal, whether that is exercise or that is voting, we're more likely to follow through and actually enact or action our intentions. And that's exactly what this particular experiment did. So it compared the effect of simply asking people if they were going, so it basically called people and you say, well, voting is important. It's your civic duty. Are you going to vote? Yes or no? And you compare that to another group where you ask all of those questions, but then also ask them three other questions that actually help them make a concrete plan. And those questions were, when or at what time will you vote? And where will you be coming from when you actually go to vote? And what do you think you'll be doing beforehand? And when they looked at voter records after the election, what they found was that this plan-making condition was by far the most successful.
Why do you think that is?
We think that the reason this works is that, you know, planning ahead links sort of intention-relevant situations with intention-relevant behaviors, by which I mean, so in my mind, I'm making a plan where I'm saying, if Y happens, I will do X. Sort of like a dress rehearsal in your mind where you unpack the details of how you will follow through and on the goals that you have made for yourself. And then in addition to having made a commitment to your goal, you're also sort of making a commitment to the plan, mm-hmm. makes it much harder for you to back out.
Hmm. Alan, thanks for your call. Mohammed in Madison, hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello to your guests. I'm an indigenous African-American Muslim, and I actually voted yesterday in downtown Madison, and I asked one of the staff people at the Election Commission how many people so far had voted early, And I think she guesstimated with some ballots they hadn't counted yet and some that are coming in the mail, maybe a little over 4,000. I don't know about the general population, but what I hear appalls me from some African Americans and Muslims. One of the reasons African Americans say they aren't voting for Hillary Clinton or aren't voting at all, you know what the other option is they attribute the crime bill that incarcerated massive numbers of African Americans not to a Republican Congress when Bill Clinton was president. He didn't write, I don't think he wrote the bill, but they connect him and Hillary with this mass incarceration, which I think is crazy. And of course, you have some Muslims who believe that, you know, extremists, that you shouldn't vote if you're a Muslim because you're acknowledging a system, yada, yada, yada. But that's what I hear. And it appalls me. I don't know on a psychological level how to evaluate this, but sometimes I remind them, have you ever noticed people in South Africa who came out from under apartheid or in Egypt where they've had military, how long they line up to just to vote?
Right.
Just appalls me that people take, you know, the one thing we have for granted that, you know, gives you a place or a participation in the politics of this country, and people kind of just throw it away.
Right. It appalls me, too. What do you think about that, Supriya? I know it's hard to, the second part of this, but his general idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely voting is the most direct way that you can impact the governance of your country. I mean, a central tenet of democratic society is that inclusive representation is better representation. By letting a smaller subset of the population, you know, decide who is most fit to govern, I think we're constraining what that governance can do for us, and we're constraining a legislative agenda for the benefit of only the people who are voting. But to the point you know, he was making about not voting for either candidate, you know, there's also research in behavioral science to indicate that when people like neither choice, like they don't like either of the two options, they're more likely to vote by rejection. So it's sort of like, it's like choosing between broccoli slaw and kale salad, and you choose the broccoli not because you like it, but because you just like the kale even more.
I'm on that side.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Yeah. Give me the broccoli salad anytime.
Yeah. What's interesting is in this context is that when people do this, this sort of voting by rejection or choice by rejection, they're actually more deliberate and less likely to be swayed by, you know, principally unimportant information like who had pneumonia or who gets a spray tan. So it's almost like voting by rejection in the face of neither candidate actually appealing to you leads to a more principled decision that is less biased by information that is not pertinent to the decision. So I would say even in a context where you don't actually like either candidate, voting by rejection is the best thing that one can do.
Hmm. But what does research show in terms of what draws people to the polls? I've always heard that you have to vote, you have to be motivated because you want to vote for someone.
Yeah, there's definitely that. You do have to be motivated because you want to vote for someone. The mere fact that we've been able to move the dial in these very significant ways, you know, some of these interventions here produce almost 11 percentage point increases, which are like unheard of.
Yes.
Do indicate that it's not the case that people are fundamentally incapable of deciding who to vote for or that they are fully unmotivated by either candidate. If they are going to actually go out and vote, it must mean that they are making a choice and they are able to make that choice, given the information that, you know, that is currently possible. And then I think there's one other thing I can say here, which is, again, a personal thought, which is simply the ethical argument, you know, but if by not voting you risk the election, or at the very least you're complicit with the election of someone who is sort of fundamentally unfit to lead or whose rhetoric is sort of debase the face of your nation, then does it not become a moral imperative, which motivates you to actually do your bit to prevent that outcome? Mm.
Supriya, thank you ever so much for being with us. Very interesting research. Supriya Sial, behavior scientist. Her piece, How Science Can Help Get Out the Vote, is in the September-October issue of Scientific American Mind. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, here we go again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson joining me in Milwaukee. It's our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like the one we did. I love it. I like talking about voter turnout. I think I've done it every year for years. And you like it, too. It's an important topic. Your support makes these conversations happen. Please give now any amount. Makes a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Well, Kathleen, we're closing in on our goal for the hour. We need just 13 more pledges before 2 o'clock to stay on track. Your support is what helps keep this radio service going strong. Help pay for the Kathleen Dunn Show with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh, we've talked about this election and we've talked about so many other elections. It's something that we love to do. We think it's important. It's an example of the importance conversations we have on politics on this program. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many more of these kinds of discussions possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Kathleen, I'm sure you've heard financial advisors say that it's really important to diversify your portfolio and make sure that you don't have all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. Well, that's what we've done here at Wisconsin Public Radio. The strength of our budget is that it comes from a number of different sources. The single biggest piece is member support, including nearly 700 members of our 9XM Leadership Circle.
9XM members support WPR with gifts of $1,200 or more every year. It's $100 a month. And, you know, if you can afford it, we're worth it. Join the 9XM.
I do, too.
Join the 9XM Leadership Circle now. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey! Here at WPR, a lot of thought goes into what we select as thank you gifts during our membership drives. We ask people for their ideas, we check out what other public radio stations are offering, and do lots of internet research. And it's all worth it because we're introducing the WPR logo day pack.
Yeah, I'd say we have a very lightweight, durable backpack.
This day pack is very versatile.
Attractive color, handy.
It looks like the straps would be comfortable. Yeah, I think it's a good deal.
It's perfect for all of your daily adventures. So ask for the WPR day pack when you donate $15 a month or more. Support your source by giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org, 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this fall membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson asking for your support of WPR. $10, $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, it's your choice. We thank you for it.
Well, we do thank you. And, you know, one of the things I'm seeing is kind of a trend here, Kathleen. We're getting a number of comments from people who are second-generation Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Tessa from Junction City writes, "When I was a child, I wanted my mom to play anything on the radio besides WPR. But now, for the past 5 years of my young adult life, I can't go a day without it. Thank you for all the hard work and great stories you provide. Thanks for growing into your listenership, Tessa, and for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, making that pledge is such an easy process. I think we've made it about as quick and as easy as we can. And here's another tip. When you become a sustainer, you really simplify your donation. You'll make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or credit card.
And then that support renews automatically every year, so your membership is always current. Pick an amount that works for you. May I suggest $10 a month and become a sustainer right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we're all looking for substance. We crave it. We want things that are substantial. And yet, it's often very hard to find because, let's face it, there's a lot of fluff and clickbait and everything else out there these days. Well, that's why you listen to The Kathleen Dunn Show, because you get substance. We really sink our teeth into important topics.
We really do. We do a lot of historical topics. The great book on George W. Bush that was referenced by other guests. Maureen Dowd was with us last week. National politics, David K. Johnston is a regular, a real tax expert who studied Donald Trump for years. International news. We really do, I think, substantive topics from 1 until 3 and, well, throughout the day. This kind of substance only possible with your support. Make your contribution at this very moment. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're making progress. We need 12 pledges now in the next few minutes to make our goal for this hour. Give to WPR to support the station you love, your public radio.
And Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it, but when you do choose to support it, you make all the WPR programs that you enjoy possible.
You decide the amount, and then you go to WPR.org or call us, 888-202-2552.
How many more pledges, John?
12.
12. And how many minutes, John?
I don't know. I don't have a clock.
Not many, but, oh, I'm sorry. I have the clock.
Yes.
I have the clock.
You have
That's
the
a
clock.
Shame.
You have the clock.
Seven minutes or so.
You're the one who's supposed to be paying attention.
All right. I got it. 7 minutes, you go. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you. Thanks,
Thank
John.
You.
Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this interesting hour on voting, and thanks for all of your phone calls, you engaged voters, you're a good lot, and everybody says so. News is coming up. David K. Johnston to follow.